Welcome to the Foresight Health Roundup Podcast, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Thursday, May 9th. We are in the middle of National Nurses Week. It started Monday, May 6th, and runs through Sunday, May 12th, which also is Mother's Day. My wife is a nurse, and she is the mother of our three kids, so it's a pretty big stretch for us here at the Berta household. I'm on my best behavior until Father's Day. Look out. In honor of Nurses Week, we're going to talk about what's up with nurses with Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How you two doing this morning? Dave?
Nurses Week and Mother's Day, Dave, that's quite a 1-2 combination. In our world, today is my wife Terry's birthday. It always falls in and around Mother's Day, which makes buying her flowers especially difficult. So it's a good week in our house, too.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Julie, how are you?
I'm well. I'm home, which is very exciting. Yeah, we are getting ready for summer over here. It's feeling good.
Thanks, Julie. Now, before we talk about what's up with nurses, I wanted to get your favorite nurse story. Dave, tell me about an incident with a nurse that stands out to you, good or bad.
I don't have a specific incident, Dave. I'm going to blow up it a little bit. You know, Terry and I are getting our care at Mayo these days, which just every encounter shows the benefits of team-based care. And for me, it's nurses are the ones who make the engines run, sharing the information, doing the scheduling, answering questions. And Mayo does an incredible job of using the higher order nursing profession, advanced practitioners, physician associates. So as we're sitting here in Nurses Week, I think we should rebrand Nurses Week as Top of License Week and let the nurses go forth and revolutionize healthcare delivery.
There you go. A market-based response.
You're here.
Julie, any specific experience with a nurse you can share?
Well, I think I've shared this before, but I was on bed rest with my son and unfortunately in the hospital for 5 weeks, which is a little unexpected and not welcomed. The nurses made that entire experience. I think I might have gone mad if it hadn't been for a couple of those nurses, and they were so amazing. And on the other hand, I had a nurse very early into my time there wake me up at 2 o'clock in the morning to take blood. And I said, I think we decided we don't need to do this. And she said, well, it's in the orders. So the degree of just order taking, it was not necessarily healthy. So pros and cons, but
yeah,
the heart of the system for sure.
I think I've mentioned this before too, but it does bear repeating. It was the nurse who told me where I can get a tetanus shot for $30 instead of her out-of-network urgent care center for $300 or my in-network hospital emergency room for who knows how much. So she screwed her revenue cycle people out of $300 cash. You know, if they only knew. Now that's a patient advocate. Okay, let's talk about what's up with nurses, courtesy of two new surveys of nurses. The first is a survey of about 2,500 nurses by nurse.org, the online community of nurses. The second is a survey of about 50,000 nurses by the U.S. Health Resources and Service Administration, or HRSA. Let me give you some of the top line findings of each survey and get your reaction. First, the nurse.org survey. 52% of the nurses said they were happy they chose nursing as a profession. That's up from 36% in 2022. 46% said they are satisfied at work. That's up from 28% in 2022. And 57% said they were burned out at work. That's down from 81% in 2022. Now the HRSA survey. 28% of the nurses said they were extremely satisfied with their jobs in 2021. That's down from 40% in 2017. The number one reason nurses said they are considering leaving their job is burnout, cited by 66% of the respondents. The number one reason nurses said they are considering remaining in their job is balanced schedule and hours, cited by 54% of the respondents. Obviously, when the surveys were conducted, could explain the differences in the results. HRSA did theirs in 2022 and 23. nurse.org did theirs in 2023 and 2024. But what are some other big takeaways from the surveys? Dave, you go first. Anything surprise you about the results? Did any other finding catch your eye? And what can we do from a policy perspective to help the work environment for nurses?
Let's talk first about the timing. And obviously, the results of the nurses.org survey were a whole lot more positive than the one done by HRSA. And to me, it shows that the marketplace is working. You know, the HRSA study, which was 2022, had some pretty good demographic information. And there are 400,000 more nurses in 2022 than there were in 2017. My guess is that number is up. Nurses as a profession are younger, more male, more diverse. They look more like America. All of those are great things. And my guess is that, as I just mentioned, I think these trends have continued. On the burden front, given the higher levels of job satisfaction, pride in the profession, lower burnout, more optimism about the future, I got to believe that the nursing employers have been listening and are doing a much better job of scheduling flexibility, using technology to make life easier for nurses. So that's all good. I mean, I think, as I say, the marketplace is working. When we let the marketplace do its magic, it actually comes through. The other thing that is interesting to me, as I said, is who did the studies. HRSA is a federal organization, the Health Resources and Services Administration. They did the massive study, the one from a couple of years ago. Nursing.org is owned by a media company and calls itself the largest on-site forum for nurses, has millions of people that interact with it. And when you look at the two studies themselves, the one from nurses.org was much more eye-catching, easier to get through, and so on. And so which organization do you think has its pulse a little closer to the heartbeat of the nursing profession? So I'm kind of intrigued that we've got such a major media organization really in tune with nurses and putting out these types of studies. And I trust the information from that study more than I do the one from the federal government. And now to the policy question. I do not believe and have never believed that professionals should organize, whether it's teachers or doctors or graduate students or nurses. Despite rhetoric to the contrary, unionization shifts the focus from the profession and customers they serve to protecting the profession's members. It's just fundamentally a bad shift. And I saw a lot of coverage of the nurses study, which wasn't done by the big nurses union, National Nurses United, really making a hard push for mandated staffing levels. Now, only 5% of nurses in the country are unionized, 225,000 out of 4.3 million. And yet they do seem to have a disproportionate impact on the legislative agenda. So as far as I'm concerned, all of these measures to impose staffing limitations and so on top down are a mistake. They basically lock in antiquated practice mechanics at a time when the profession and the industry is just changing way too fast. Honestly, we should be focusing on goals or outcomes, not on process measures. These are things like preventable medical errors, avoidable complications, falls, injuries, pressure sores, longer hospital stays, higher numbers of hospital readmissions than necessary, and death. And, you know, reward organizations that do a good job of that and punish those that don't, you know, through transparency and, if necessary, fines. On the policy front, what I'd really like to see, and this won't surprise anyone, is a full-on push for liberalizing licensing so that all professions in healthcare can practice at the top of their license. They can cross state lines. They don't have to do stupid things that benefit sort of incumbent practices. They can actually move their professional activities in the way that the marketplace is moving. And in terms of the things that surprise me, and it really ties to my last point there, is that ambulatory community health and non-bedside nurses were the ones that had the highest levels of job satisfaction. That's where the marketplace is going. 29% of nurses are doing a secondary gig. They're also starting to fill into the cracks of where the marketplace is going, which is toward democratized and decentralized delivery of whole person health. So let's not get in the way. Let's have our policies support that movement, not block it.
Thanks, Dave. Julie, any questions for Dave?
Yeah, Dave, I read a lot in these surveys that caught my eye. So I have a question for you. Which of these two stats surprises you more? That 67% of nurses in this country are white, or that 46% of RNs who completed their degree more recently, between 16 and 2020, completed part of their degree online versus, you know, less than 20% years ago?
Which surprises me more? I know the percentage of white nurses is going down overall. I guess I'm a little surprised that it's that high. So they both surprise me a little bit. That surprises me in a negative way. Your second one surprises me in a remarkably positive way, which shows that the education of nurses is moving to much more flexible platforms, which I believe will not only lower the cost, but will make it more accessible to a more diverse supply of future nurses so that we can work against that first statistic that you brought up.
Yeah, asynchronous learning. That's great. It's something we learned during the pandemic. It's great to see that applied to nursing. And Julie, and now it's your turn. Did anything surprise you about the results? Were there any sleeper findings that say something new or profound? And what would you do to improve the work life of nurses from a market innovation perspective?
Well, you know, these two are not the only surveys in town. I saw that AMN also did their annual survey. And two headlines from the last few years of these types of surveys leave me wanting to feel more positive about where we're headed. So in November of 2022, the headline was, half of nurses consider leaving the profession, survey finds. But then by May 2024, it's more than a third of nurses extremely likely to change jobs in 2024. So, you know, the percentages are coming down. Trying to be optimistic. You know, Dave, I was also struck by this stat. I'll talk about it a little bit differently. About 29% of nurses who had a secondary form of income, you know, it's kind of amazing when you think about it, right? Like working per diem makes sense to me. I can see plenty of non-nursing side hustles that people can come up with. Working overtime makes sense to me. It was kind of surprising to read for a second there that nurses with a higher level of education are more likely to have a secondary source of income. But I guess that makes sense if you can get more shifts or, you know, work more flexible per diem somewhere. So what it does say to me is that our nurses are not making what they need to make, or they're bored. I'm not quite sure, but we shouldn't have a profession with a third with a side hustle. That's how I feel about that. It wasn't surprising to me that, and I think I said something like this a couple weeks ago when we last talked about nurses, the quote I read around ambulatory community health and non-bedside nurses report the highest levels of job satisfaction. And this basically goes to show that there's no shortage of nurses, but only a shortage of nurses willing to work at the bedside. That was what one person said. So I'm a nurse. Do I want to work where someone is really sick and potentially facing death, or maybe in a lot of pain? Or do I want to work at the med spa or the ambulatory surgery center? You know, I mean, there's so many more options these days. And with the way healthcare is trending, nurses can go to a lot of nicer environments. So why wouldn't they do that? So I do think that these surveys lose, you know, the forest through the trees of where nurses are today and what their opportunities look like, and really understanding where the crux of the issues are. It's no surprise to me that burnout is worse among the younger generation. I think that's actually a societal trend and not something that's particular to nurses. Some of these jobs that people have held for the last 50 years are hard, and they are hard on your work-life balance, and they're hard, you know, intellectually and physically. And some of the younger generation, frankly, I'm not so sure that they want to hack it. So, you know, I also think the survey results are skewed in that direction. But I'll just say that I've been talking to a number of HR leaders and nursing leaders in health systems for the past couple of years. And obviously, a few years ago, their main challenges were high vacancy rates and hiring. And every innovative staffing company was running at full steam and innovative staffing models were sprouting up all over the place. But fast forward to today, I'm hearing a more evolved story. You know, one, training and onboarding, you know, related to the influx of all these new grads to get them where they need to be is a number one for most health systems. And, you know, number two is related to that, which is in a program, internal content creation, employee learning that really helps develop nurses as a profession, helps them progress. That's not a system that is a well-honed thing in healthcare today. And the third issue I'm hearing most about is, of course, driving pipeline. They've been talking about pipeline for a long time. HCA owns their own nursing school. You know, MultiCare is involved in an international program. Many health systems have relationships with local nursing schools. Geisinger has created their own program to try to deal with their rural issues. So you've seen a lot of pipeline development initiatives over the last decade, but it still continues to be a massive issue. And there are a lot of market solutions that are starting to focus on these issues. One I'll call out specifically, not a company that we're invested in, but a company called Laudio that is developing a platform that, Dave, you'll love this, uses artificial intelligence and other analytics to basically look at important drivers of the culture, engagement and retention, and looking for staff members at risk for turnover. And trying to help nursing leaders manage more proactively. And when you think about the data that can be had in society today, I mean, there's just a whole different way you can be looking at retention and development. So I don't know, there's a lot going on in nursing and workforce development in general that where technology can play a huge role. And I think we are barely scratching the surface.
Yeah, risk stratification, right? In nurse recruitment and retention. That's fascinating. Thanks, Julie. Dave, any questions for Julie?
Yeah, so given the high-level administrative burden that nurses must fulfill in current working circumstances, there are a few professions today that are as labor-intensive as nursing is. How different will the professional responsibilities and day-to-day activities of nurses be in 10 years than they are today?
You know, you're already seeing efforts to remove the administrivia from nurses and put that work into the hands of either lower-level clinical workers or virtual nurses. Administration is a big place where virtual nursing is being used. So you're seeing the top of the license, Dave, happening in some places on the inpatient side. You know, I don't know if you've stayed at a hotel or seen the robots at some of the hospitals yet, but I think robots will replace a lot of the needs for nurses to deliver meds and in some cases and other activities. So, you know, gosh, it's professionally, nurses are probably headed towards much more of a segmentation of workflow than we've ever known for them before. They've just been lumped into doing just about everything at the bedside, right? Mm-hmm. So overall, I think nurses will have much better options going forward and not be the dumping ground for everything in healthcare. And we'll be able to automate a lot of tasks, whether on-prem or virtually, to really give them a lot of support. But we are a ways from that today. I know a few hospitals that are experimenting with their robots, but it's like Star Trek right now in health systems. So sit tight.
Thanks, Julie. And I do think the interest in nursing is high, but I saw an interesting stat. We turned away more than 55,000 qualified applicants from nursing schools last year because of nursing school capacity issues. So I think that's one root cause of the problem. So let's start with fixing that. Now let's talk about other big news that happened this week. It wasn't all bad, was it? Julie, what else happened that we should know about?
Well, one of my friends and CEOs from Blue Cross Blue Shield of Louisiana, Steve Uberhai, stepped down, and Brian Kammerlink, who's been a great leader on that team for a number of years, is stepping into the CEO role. And I think this might be the final nail in the coffin for the BCPS LA Elevance deal. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's an interesting transaction. On again, off again, on again. We'll see what happens. Dave, what other news is worth mentioning?
What caught my eye were the headlines coming out of Steward's bankruptcy proceedings that they're planning to sell all 31 of their hospitals. They have $9 billion in debt. So a lot of debt on those hospitals. So one, that's happening. But the most interesting thing is it's really not Steward selling the hospitals because they don't own the hospitals anymore. The REIT MPT does, and they've actually provided $75 million in debtor financing to Steward to keep the hospitals up and running while they go out and try to find new tenants for the hospitals. So Steward is an operator. It's not an owner of its hospitals. And if we think about hospitals as a shrinking asset class, which it is, this type of mechanism for finding new operators and reconfiguring the operations of hospitals, I think could be remarkably effective. Unfortunately, most hospitals are owned and operated by the same entity, so we don't have as clear a mechanism for working out the reorganization of facilities that are in trouble.
Yeah, I think putting the words $40 million yacht in a headline is going to sell a lot of newspapers. So thanks, Dave. Thanks, Julie. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed on today's show, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can subscribe to The Roundup on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.